You hate me!
I can't think if you're going to get hysterical. We've got to work out what we are going to do.
I'm going to get shot. We're about to die. Can't you get that into your thick head?
Cole. What? We must be under the front of the place. It's dropped straight through to here. Now, if I can just move that cover, I reckon there'd be enough room to squeeze out.
We're going to stand there. Get on with it.
I can't shift it.
Oh, hurry up. He'll be back in a minute.
Well, why don't you get up here and help me then? Instead of standing there whinging.
It's solid.
Put your back into it, you lazy cow.
What did you call me?
Does it matter? We have got to get this shifted.
You're not dealing with one of your cheap pickups now. I'm supposed to be your wife and I will not be spoken to like that.
We could be shot any minute. Remember? All right, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, okay? Now, will you please help me?
It's better. Derek, it's not going to move. We're trapped.
Okay. If we can't get out this way, we're going to have to try to overpower him.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. He's twice your size. He's fit. And he has a gun. What's he doing now?
I'm trying to find something to beat him with.
Oh, yes, I'm sure he'll have left a baseball bat lying around handy.
Just cut the clever comment and help.
Oh, what's the point? It's hopeless.
Phil, I don't give up that easy. I'll wait behind the door. When you hear the lock go, you start screaming to distract him. And I'll jump him.
By which time you'll probably have shot me.
You've got a better idea.
Anything has to be better than you pretending you're Clint Eastwood. It's pathetic. The only people you've ever managed to jump successfully have been your secretaries, which you've done with sickening regularity.
What?
You think I haven't known about it? If you want to start playing the hero, save it for Miss Richmond. She's paid to be impressed by you.
In case you had forgotten, that door could be opened by a raging psychopath at any moment. This is hardly the time or place to start discussing your paranoia.
Oh, I've been meaning to raise the subject for some time, and the way things are shaping up, I might not get another chance.
Are you going to help me or not?
Not. I wouldn't claim to be a great expert on homicidal maniacs, but I would suggest that hitting one with a blunt instrument is not likely to improve his disposition.
We don't know he's a homicidal maniac.
True, he could be an over-enthusiastic salesman trying to interest us in a set of encyclopedias, but I doubt it.
If he wanted to kill us, he could have done it by now.
Perhaps he enjoys watching us squirm.
Now, this has all been planned.
Derek, if you know what's going on, I think it's time you let me into the secret. Are you in some sort of trouble?
No.
Liar. I've seen you sneaking down to get to the post before me. And all those threatening letters from the taxman.
The Inland River, you don't send a hitman to collect their jewels.
Well, not yet, anyway.
So who else is after you, then? What the hell have you been up to?
Sorry to have kept you so... Oh, dear. We have got ourselves in a mess, haven't we? Right, now, come down here before you do yourselves an injury. Now, if you'd have asked me, I could have saved you the bother. I cemented over the Coro last weekend. We don't have open fires anymore. Such a bother to make up. And heat just goes up the chimney anyway. They look attractive, I grant you. But one's got to move with the times. Oh, Derek.
Yeah.
Would you be so good as to come up here and carry this tray downstairs?
No.
I wouldn't ask, but I think I ought to keep both hands free in the circumstances.
Yes, of course.
I thought it might be pleasant if we had a little drink together before we got down to business. After all, it was a long drive, and you did have a disturbed night's sleep.
Yeah.
Sorry there's not much of a selection, but I can recommend the white wine. Now, please help yourself. Oh, perhaps you'd like me mother, Sandra?
How do we know it's not drugged?
Oh, I can assure you I wouldn't tamper with a decent sancerre. Now, Liebfraubitsch. Now, that might be improved by the addition of a little arsenic. But I wouldn't be so crass as to offer it. Look, I'll have a drink first, it'll set your mind at rest. Just pour it out and leave it on that packing case there. Thank you. Now, if you wouldn't mind backing off a little. Look, I'm sorry about the security precautions, but you haven't proved very trustworthy so far. Yeah, good year. Crisp, clear taste. How do you rate it, Derek? I couldn't help noticing you had some excellent wine guides in your bookcase, so I welcome your opinion.
Oh, very nice.
I always look at people's books. I find them a handy guide to character. Of course, when you're dealing with a couple like yourselves, there's the added spice of trying to work out which is whose. Now, I must admit, I decided to go along with stereotypes. It seemed romantic novels had to represent your relaxation reading, Sandra. I mean, I couldn't see Derek curling up with a Barbara Cartland. In fact, I came to the conclusion that you weren't a reader of fiction at all, Derek. Perhaps you don't have much imagination. Or if you do, it's only aroused by the sort of literature that gets tucked away in dark and secret places.
What?
Not left on display where any passing gunman might browse through it. Are you sure you won't join us in a drink, Sandra?
What's she going to do with this?
Oh, afraid I can't answer that yet. Although it would be dishonest of me not to admit the possibility that I may have to blow your brains out.
Oh!
But I'm sure we all hope that that won't be necessary. Besides, you've got a fair chance of being killed when you try and cross a busy road these days. So it's best not to think about it. In the meantime, it is my intention to make your stay here as pleasant as possible in the circumstances.
Thank you. That is very civilised of you.
Oh, my pleasure, Derek. Good manners cost nothing.
I'm sure you're a reasonable man.
Oh, yeah, I pride myself on that. Though it's very astute of you to have noticed after such a short acquaintance.
I was wondering if there might be a possibility of some sort of deal.
Would you mind if I smoke? It's a disgusting habit, I know, especially in an enclosed space like this. I've tried to give it up on many occasions without success so far. The problem is, I tend to get irritable without a cigarette. I'm afraid I've got a bit of a temper. It's got me in quite a lot of trouble in the past. I'm trying to come to terms with it. But in the meantime, it might be in your interest to let me light up.
Please, feel free.
Oh, thank you, Derek. Would either of you like one?
We don't.
Very wise. You know, they used to sell me ones and twos in the newsagents by our school. I was hooked before I was 10. Nowadays, it's crack and heroin. Well, that's hardly progress, is it? Oh, I'm sorry, Derek. I believe I interrupted you earlier. Now, were you about to ask me something?
I was hoping that we might be able to come to some sort of arrangement.
I see. What did you have in mind?
Rather depends on why you've brought us here.
And why do you think that is, Derek?
I don't know.
Then that would seem to make any further discussion rather academic.
Well, I'm a businessman. I make the best deal I can for my company. Sometimes people don't like the way I work. Sometimes I tread on their few toes here and there. Inevitable in business.
I'll take your word for that, Derek. I mean, I don't have experience of such matters at a management level. I'm merely a humble employee.
So someone's paying you to do this?
In a manner of speaking, yes.
Then if I were to make you a better offer...
Oh, I don't think it's that simple, Derek. I didn't say this was just about money.
You admitted someone was employing you, and everyone has their price.
That's been your experience, has it?
It's always got me through so far.
So I've heard. I mean, you're an entrepreneur, a beacon of the market economy, and as such,
humble artisan like myself would surely be at a disadvantage in any business that we might discuss. I mean, you could outwit me with your knowledge of the English language, dazzle me with your speed of thought. And the only card I have to play is the ability to plug a small hole in any part of your anatomy I choose. Well, it's hardly an equal contest.
I've got a bit of rainy day money put by on the QT, you know. Don't want the income tax nosing round it.
You never told me.
Shut up, Sandra. I could go to 10,000.
10,000?
Well, you're a lucky man, Derek. There's not many people can lay their hands on that sort of money in the current economic climate.
Used notes.
It gets worse.
No problems, no questions. All you've got to do is let us go.
I still think there's an ethical problem to be sorted out here. Are you entirely convinced that loyalty can be bought and sold?
It's easy when you've got the morals of a sewer rat.
I told you to stay out of this, Sandra. I could maybe go to 12.
My goodness me. Is that the time? It's your fault, Derek, keeping me chatting, taking my mind off work. I'm afraid I've got a bit more business to do, so I'm going to have to leave you for a while.
14.
14,000?
Well, I'm awfully sorry, but I'll have to handcuff you while I'm gone. Now, it shouldn't be too long, but you can never tell with the way traffic is these days. So, to save embarrassment, does either of you wish to use the toilet
first? Oh, 15 grand, and that really is my limit. I can't raise any more.
Well, would you mind clipping these to your left wrist, Derek? And the other side goes on Sandra's right hand. Jolly good. And now, we reverse the process with these. Oh, that is cosy, isn't it? I'll be as quick as I can. I mean, I'm sure you two got plenty to talk about.
But wait!
Yes, Sandra?
Look, I don't pretend to know what's going on, but it's clearly because of something Derek's done or hasn't done. I'm just an innocent bystander, really.
Oh. Can any of us put hand on heart and say we're totally innocent these days?
If you let me go, I wouldn't call the police. I wouldn't say anything to anyone.
Well, that's awfully decent of you, Sandra. However, as I mentioned, I am running a bit behind schedule, so I don't really have time to consider the implications of either of your offers at the moment. But don't worry. We can always continue our discussion later.
You cow. You'd be quite happy to toss me to the wolves, wouldn't you?
Nothing would give me greater pleasure. If you gave me the gun, I'd shoot you myself. You deserve it the way you've lied to me, cheated me.
What are you talking about?
My father was right about you. He told me you were a cheap little crook.
Didn't stop him putting money in the business, did it?
That was for me, not you. He wanted to look after my future.
Who do you think you are, kidding? He got it back with interest, and I never heard him complain.
Well, you wouldn't, would you? You always manage to be busy when I want to visit my parents. I expect Miss Richmond has a lot to do with that. But Daddy's never come round to you. He's always kept my room made up and ready at home.
There is no way you're going to get out of this without me, so why don't you button your lip and try and help?
Get in the car.
I beg your pardon?
In the car.
If this is a robbery, I have to tell you I've only got £1.40 in my purse. You should have got me before I did the shopping.
Look, I'm not messing about. This thing's loaded.
Quite possibly, but you wouldn't use it.
I wouldn't count on that, lady.
Nobody gets shot in Sainsbury's car park in Esher. It's unheard of. And there's no point in hiding it in your pocket. It just looks vaguely obscene.
Maybe. But it can still be effective. Now, get in the car.
Have you thought of your escape?
Eh?
Oh, I know people have trained themselves to look the other way when there's a handbag snatch or a mugging. But I have this touching faith that if I was lying there in a pool of blood, they might start to take notice. Look at the way they all gather round a nasty road accident. Morbid curiosity, I know, but not very helpful to you.
Look, if it comes to it, I'll be all right.
Will you? Have you ever tried to get a car out of this place? There's always some idiot who's lost their parking ticket holding up the queue. You have to get them stamped by the cashier, you know. And the bloke in the booth's no help. He's always too busy reading the Sporting Life. You could try smashing through the barrier on the entrance side like in the movies, but you still have to cope with the traffic on Fisher's Lane, and that's usually at a standstill. All in all, it seems an awful lot of trouble for £1.40. If you're that desperate, you might as well have it.
I don't want your money, OK? I just want you to get in the car.
Are you kidnapping me?
Well, that was the general idea, yes. And I'd appreciate it if you'd hurry it up a bit. People are starting to look.
Well, with the greatest respect, that's rather more your problem than mine. Why don't you stop pointing that thing at me and then we can discuss it a bit more calmly?
All right. Now, will you please get in the car? I promise you no harm will come to you.
You're not a rapist, are you?
Do I look like a rapist?
I don't think I've ever actually seen one. Except those photo fit pictures in the paper, and they don't really look like anyone, do they?
Well, I can assure you I'm not a rapist. I detest rapists. I've given a great deal of thought to the criminal justice system lately. It's generally weighted to preserve the exploitation of the poor and prevent a fairer distribution of wealth. However, sexual violence is one of the few areas where I'd opt for stiffer sentences. I did consider castration. I mean, it's simple and cheap, but a bit of a problem with a case of mistaken identity.
A thinking hitman? Would you mind putting my shopping in the boot?
My pleasure.
Do you do this for a living?
Sort of.
Must be very interesting.
It has its moments.
Look, before we go...
Oh, what now?
I really enjoyed our little chat. You seem like a nice bloke. I'd hate you to get into any trouble on my account, and there's obviously been a ghastly mistake here. If you've been employed to kidnap some heiress, then your boss isn't going to be very pleased when you arrive with me. I mean, I'm no one special.
Look here. Look, I've got a photograph. I mean, that's you, isn't it?
Yes.
Then you're the target.
Gosh. This is really quite intriguing. Why would anyone want to kidnap me?
The easiest way to find out is to come with me. But we are running a bit behind schedule.
Yes, all right.
Yeah.
I can't be too late, though, or my mum will kill me. She has to know where I am every minute of the day. I went on holiday without her once. Week in Benidorm, just to spite the old bag. She still goes on about it to this day. Mind you, it'll do her good to worry about someone else for a change. Have you got your parking ticket?
Well, of course I've got it. I do plan these things, you know. I'm not a bloody amateur.
All right.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be rude.
That's all right. God, you're right about the traffic.
Well, it gets easier once you get past the high street.
Yeah, we'll make up a bit of time on the dual carriageway.
Where are we going?
Oh, I can't tell you that. By rights, I ought to have blindfolded you and put you in the back.
That really won't be necessary.
Well, suppose we see some of your friends.
I haven't got any friends. It's just me and Mother. And she never goes out. Selfish cow.
You're not fond of her, then?
I hate her. I've often thought of doing away with the old baggage. I broke up a jam jar with a hammer once, trying to make ground glass to put in her Horlicks.
Takes a long time to kill someone like that.
Yes, I suppose it would. And a lot of jam jars. Mind you, I've always got plenty. I plan to take them to the recycling centre, but I never get round to it somehow. Anyway, I couldn't get the bit small enough. She'd have noticed and there'd have been hell to pay. She'd have sulked for weeks. I don't suppose you'd consider doing a bit of moonlighting when all this is sorted out.
What do her in for you, you mean?
Well, I've got a bit of money put by. Not much, just what I've saved on groceries, special offers. I expect you're very expensive, though.
It depends on the job. Be cheap, we'd just walk out on her.
I couldn't do that. She's my mother. What would people say? You are an experienced hitman, though. Have you been doing this sort of thing long?
Long enough.
If you don't mind me asking, how many people have you actually done in?
This morning?
No. Over your whole career. Doesn't have to be an exact figure. I don't suppose you remember them all, but approximately, say, within, half a dozen or so?
Well, approximately, within half a dozen or so, allowing for lapses of memory, I'd say it was about, none.
Oh. You're not a very good hitman, then?
Well, that depends on how you view the exercise.
Well, you might get marks for style, but as a potential employer, I have to point out you're pretty low on productivity.
With respect, I think you're ignoring the psychological implications.
Look, I'm not being unkind, but if you're a hitman, you're supposed to shoot people, and you're clearly not very good at it.
Oh, that's a very simplistic view. Most power is purely symbolic. Now, why do I stop at this red light, for instance?
What?
Well, think about it. It presents no physical barrier to the car. It merely represents the relevant clauses in the Road Traffic Act, which, in turn, symbolise the weight of the law which might descend on me if I ignore them. See what I'm getting at? My victims do what I tell them because a gun represents the possibility of a violent death. It's all in the mind.
It didn't work with me.
You're here, aren't you? In your case, it symbolised a danger and excitement which is otherwise absent from your life. And since that was enough to get you along, any violence on my part would have been entirely gratuitous.
God, you need a degree in psychology to become a gangster these days.
Sadly, it's not a common approach.
Well, it wouldn't work with my mother. Unless you're gambling on her having a heart attack the mere sight of a revolver.
It's not unknown.
Not her. She's as strong as an ox. Oh, she's one of those people that's always ill. Always encouraging you to believe she's not long for this world. She survives. Oh, yes, she survives. It's her stomach at the moment. A martyr to her digestion. Where did you get beef, Sophie? You know I can't eat it. But you give her a box of chocolates and she'll nurse it in the corner with that evil glint in her piggy eyes and God help you if so much as sneak an arm and whirl.
Yeah, well, it's all about power, see? That's what makes the world go round. The power of an individual or an institution to impose its will on others, usually through fear. In your case, the fear of neglecting your duty and the reaction of the world to that neglect. Remove the fear and you remove the power.
You've obviously given this a lot of thought.
Well, I've had plenty of time. I've just completed a 20-year sentence at one of Her Majesty's hotels.
I see. Well, that would rather explain your comparative lack of success in the hitman business.
Well, I suppose it does. However, I believe the opportunity for contemplation and study has equipped me to do better in the future.
I hope so. It also explains why we get on so well.
Hey?
Well, we've got so much in common. I've been stuck with my mother about that long. Can't be very different from being locked in Wormwood Scrubs.
Less prospect of time off for good behaviour. Well, since we're getting on so well, I wonder if I might presume to ask a small favour.
Of course.
Look, our business has been quite informal so far. I mean, I like it better that way myself, but my other victims don't have your depth of vision, so I'm afraid I'll be obliged to employ my gun again when we reach our destination.
Well, it's quite understandable.
And it might help proceedings go more smoothly if you could appear frightened when necessary. Otherwise, I may be forced to commit some mindless act of violence to keep them in line.
You can rely on me.
I knew you'd understand.
Would you mind pulling into that lay-by for a minute?
Eh?
Well, I know we're running a bit late, but... a favour for a favour?
Yeah. Okay. What's the problem?
Would you mind if I kissed you?
Eh?
I often daydream about someone coming along and taking me away from it all. Oh, I know it's not a practical proposition. Knights on white chargers are a bit dated. And you'd be far too busy threatening people to be bothered with someone like me. But it'd be nice to have the odd memory to hang on to after all this was over. Oh, a secret like that might even make Mother seem a bit more bearable. Of course, I'd understand if you said you didn't want me to. You might find me totally unattractive.
Not at all.
Well, it'd be all right then.
Why not?
Thank you.
Don't mention it.
How was it for you?
I'm not sure. Or maybe we should try again. Just to make certain.
Well, I wouldn't want to make you too late.
Well, I could always say we got stuck in traffic.
Mm.
There's something almost symbolic about being handcuffed to you. It's the story of my life, really.
I can't say I'm overjoyed at the situation myself.
It's your fault we're here.
You hear that?
What?
There's a car arriving. He'll be back in a minute.
Well, there's not very much I can do about that, is
there?
Just
leave me to do the talking when he gets here.
I don't see why. Your performance hasn't exactly inspired confidence so far.
Oh, he may have been playing it cool, but I could tell he was interested in making himself a few bob.
Well, that's a comfort. If chaining us up shows he's nibbling at the bait, by the time he starts shooting, we'll know he's ready to make a deal.
Shut up!
Hello? Oh, sorry if it's so long. I really don't know when they built that M25. It seems to cause more problems than it solves. If they're really taking the environment seriously, they'd have put the money into public transport instead.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Sophie. Sophie, this is Derek and Sandra.
Hello.
Hello.
Pleased to meet you.
Or perhaps you'd like to unlock their handcuffs for me.
Oh, certainly.
And then help yourself to a drink. I expect you two are ready for another by now.
Oh, thank you.
Not for me.
Oh, moderation in all things, I admire that. For myself, I can resist everything except temptation, as Oscar Wilde once said. So perhaps you'd be kind enough to pour me another one, Derek?
Of course.
I should have brought some nibbles down, really, but thoughtless of me.
Well, I could get the shopping out of the car.
Later, perhaps. Before I went to collect you, Sophie, Derek and Sandra were just opening negotiations for their freedom. Have either of you had any further thoughts on the subject?
If you could let me make a couple of calls, I could possibly raise 20,000.
Oh, one cannot fail to be impressed by your resourcefulness, Derek. Would you like to join in this auction, Sophie?
Oh, I don't have that sort of money.
It's a mistake to assume the prize necessarily goes to the highest bidder. Understandable, of course, with the rise of monetarism, but some of us appreciate more spiritual values.
It would help if we knew why we were here.
Possibly. It would certainly be an interesting area to explore.
Then why don't you tell us?
Well, that would rather spoil the fun. In my experience, the pursuit of knowledge is often more satisfying than its actual assimilation, which explains the enduring appeal of quiz shows, I suppose. So, as for your starter for 10, it might be worth considering whether you have anything in common, for instance. I mean, clearly, Derek and Sandra have less than most married couples.
So there's some connection between us and Sophie?
Eh? It's a possibility.
Where'd you come from?
Easter.
What'd you do?
I look after my mother. It's a full-time job. I keep hoping to be made redundant, but I haven't struck lucky yet.
Well, what does she do?
As little as possible, besides making my life a misery.
Oh, this is hopeless. Can't you give us a clue?
Oh, you can't give up that easily.
Well, how long have we got? Is there a time limit?
Only my low boredom threshold. No, keep trying.
When did you start losing your hair?
Oh, beg your pardon?
You haven't always been bald, have you?
I don't see that that's relevant.
May I open my handbag?
That depends. You haven't got a gun in there, have you?
Of course not. There's the old bag's pension book, and I'm ashamed to say Mickey Spillane I swiped from her in an idle moment, and of course the £1.40 that you already know about.
Yeah, well, best not take any chances. Give it here.
In the zip pocket at the back, you'll find an old brownie snap.
Oh, yeah, got it, yeah. Seaside shop.
South End.
Oh, filthy beach. Never get a European flag.
Forget the beach. What else do you see?
It's a baby.
Me?
Bonnie.
Thank you. What else?
A couple. Presumably Mum and Dad.
Forget about Mother. We've already discussed her. Concentrate on him.
Loud shirt, no taste.
Agreed. What else?
Slick back hair without which he could be taken for a younger version of our Derek.
Bingo.
You bastard.
You don't know it's me. I mean, nothing's been proved. You're just guessing.
It's you all right, Derek.
Let me see that photograph.
Are you doubting my judgment? I must warn you, that sort of thing makes me lose my temper.
Ha ha! Wasn't the same. Yeah, no, but if she's only a baby in the picture, it must have been a long time ago. Hmm? People change. Hmm? When there has to be an element of doubt.
Oh, there's no doubt, Derek. I didn't know about the photo, but I was aware of the family connection. It just came out a bit quicker than I expected. Oh, bright girl, your daughter.
Are you this person's father?
I'd like a straight answer.
You bet he is. Ran out on us when I was 3 months old.
Look! Maybe I am. But you don't know the whole story.
I don't need to. You left me with her, that's enough. It's all your fault. My whole life with that cow is down to you.
I always knew you were a worthless little creep, but I didn't think even you would stoop to abandoning a tiny baby.
Well, I mustn't intrude on your family reunion. You've got such a lot of catching up to do. I'll leave you to it. Enjoy yourselves. I'll be back later.
I've often wondered what you were like. I only had that photo to go on, and it isn't exactly inspiring. She wouldn't tell me anything about you. You are a forbidden subject. Most of the time I hated you. Sometimes I could understand you leaving her. Well, she's not an easy woman, but
exactly.
You didn't have to leave me too. I started to think she might be the way she was because of you, because of what you did to her. And then I hated you even more. The only time I didn't hate you was when I imagined you were dead. A heroic death, of course, somehow connected with trying to claim me back. But here you are, very much alive, and not even a postcard to show for 20 lost years, so you've even spoiled that.
We weren't married, you know, me and your mum.
What difference does that make?
Comes as no surprise to me. So you got this poor woman pregnant, and then you didn't even have the decency to marry her.
She was already married. I don't suppose she mentioned that.
I told you, you're a forbidden subject.
I am not taking all the blame for what happened. She was as much at fault as me. She was my secretary.
Of course. In Derek's eyes, a secretary is just a whore on PAYE.
I didn't even start
it. I find that hard to believe.
I'm telling it like it was. I was just trying to be kind to her, that's all.
Ha!
She was miserable at home. Her husband was a dead, boring git. Only time she ever enjoyed herself was with me, so we had a little fling. That's all it was meant to be. A bit of healthy, no-obligation sex. Where's the harm in that? And then she got pregnant and chapped and left him. I told her not to. I told her to get rid of it. No one would ever have known.
Thanks a lot.
It would have been better all round. Oh, but even she'd admit that now. But I still stood by her. Even though it was damned awkward, we got this place in Southender. I tried to make it work out. Honest, I did. Somehow it was never the same after she'd left him.
I can vouch for that. Sex is no fun for you without the danger of being found out.
There was a lot more to it than that. But in the end, well, it was over. I could say that, even if she couldn't. Best thing was to make a clean break. Wasn't easy for me, you know. I had to leave a flourishing business behind, start a new life right from scratch, and I did it. My turnover last year was $500,000.
Congratulations.
It was better for you, too, in the long run. And what sort of life would it have been brought up by two parents who were rowing all the time?
So you did it for me. You're all heart, really, aren't you?
I didn't ask for any of it to happen. I said I'd pay for the abortion. If she'd listened to me, she'd still be married now.
To a boring git?
Well, he wasn't that. Bad, not really, just a bit set in his ways. But if she'd listened, she could have got it all out of her system and he'd never have been any the wiser.
You're surely not suggesting any of this is an excuse for your behaviour. All you were interested in was satisfying your lust. You didn't give tuppence for Sophie's mother or her poor, unfortunate, boring husband.
Oh, yes, I did. I cared a lot about him. He's my brother, see? My only family. We ain't spoken to each other since all this happened.
What are you doing out here?
Pruning the roses. What does it look like?
I've been searching all over the house for you. I mean, I couldn't understand it. I expected you to be there, eager and waiting. I hadn't realised that gardening would take priority.
It's called savouring the moment. I've waited a long time for this. I'm not going to spoil things by rushing it. Are they all here?
Oh, everything has been done in accordance with your instructions, Master. I feel a bit like that fairy in a tempest.
Any connection between you and Ariel is purely coincidental.
Yeah, well, he didn't have the cope with the M25, did he? That might have clipped his wings a bit.
How are they?
Well, I didn't have time to arrange a shipwreck, so they're about as cheerful as can be expected, considering they think I might blow them away at any minute. I mean, Derek's not at all as I imagined him.
No?
Bald, run to fat, sweats a lot. Hardly matches your description at all. I was worried I might have got the wrong bloke at first.
Oh, he was always the good-looking one when we were kids. He won baby shows, you know.
Hard to believe now.
There are photos of them in the family album. Then they move on to him in the school rugby and cricket team. None of me, of course. Not even when I won the geography prize. He won it the year after, but only because I did his homework for him.
More fool you.
I didn't have much choice. He hung me out of the window by my ankles till I agreed. It's not funny. My glasses fell off and broke on the pavement. I got in real trouble for that. I had to wear them for the rest of the term, festooned in sellotape, to remind me not to be so careless again. That was the unkindest cut of all. I was never careless. I was meticulous about all my things.
Oh, you still are, Will.
He'd have been happy living in a pigsty. But we shared a room, so he always had me to tidy up after him.
And why did you do that, Will? Did he threaten to stuff you up the chimney if you didn't?
He didn't have to. We both knew that I'd get the blame if it was in a mess. Oh, nothing was ever his fault. He was always the favourite. Oh, not just with our parents. Aunties would come crawling out of the woodwork to shower presents on him at Christmas and birthdays. I was lucky if I got a ruler and compass.
Yeah, well, I can't say I blame you. You sound a right little wimp.
I thought I'd trained you out of those macho attitudes. Appearances can be deceptive, you know.
Oh, I see. So you just seem to be an ugly four-eyed schoolboy squirming in his shadow.
I grant you he was better looking and more popular than me, but he was also incredibly stupid. It didn't take me long to work out that if I wanted something, all I had to do was to convince him that he wanted it, and then wait till he got bored, and it was mine. If I didn't like somebody, all I had to do was to poison his tiny mind against them, and I got my vengeance. So gradually the balance of power changed, though he never realized it.
Oh, that's where you're so much cleverer than me, Will. While he was treading on my face, I might have been tempted to explain I was the one pulling the strings.
Everything comes to him who waits.
Well, it's certainly starting to look that way. He's a worried man. Offer me 20 grand and let him off the hook.
By my estimation, he's worth more than that. Perhaps he's not worried enough.
Oh, he will be. The ladies were just starting to rake over ancient history, which got him sweating even more. Mind you, if you want to savour the moment, you better get a move on, or they'll have said it all for you. If they haven't torn him limb from limb.
That was what I was hoping.
Oh, so that was part of the master plan too, was it?
Mm.
And there was me thinking it was just fortuitous.
I think you mean fortuitous.
Do I?
I believe so. Fortuitous, that happens or is produced by fortune or chance, accidental, casual.
Oh, thank you very much, Magnus Magnusson.
Though I admire your pursuit of knowledge while you were away, I must remind you that it is not enough to try to learn the Oxford English Dictionary by heart. There is a little more to the art of conversation than that.
If you say so. Well, as it happens, I knew it was fortuitous all along. I just try and make the odd mistake to please you.
What?
Since I've been out, you haven't had much opportunity to patronise me. And knowing that's one of your greatest pleasures, it'd be cruel of me not to give you the chance sometimes.
Don't try to be clever. It doesn't suit you.
See, you're at it again. Do you know what I think?
No, frankly, I don't want to know what you think. We've got more important things to deal with.
Yeah, well, anything's better than the truth, innit, Will? I don't reckon you've told me the whole story about you and your brother.
What would you know about it?
More than most. After all, you preferred me when I was a mindless thug. We were happy then. You, the gay Professor Higgins, and me, the psychopathic Eliza Doolittle. Those were the days, eh?
It wasn't like that at all.
Not exactly, no. Because you never really wanted me to learn anything, did you?
How can you say that? After all I've done for you.
Oh, you've got me 20 years inside.
That wasn't my fault.
Well, maybe not. Well, I don't blame you for it anyway. Well, except while I was in there, I started to see things like they really are. I admired you in the old days. You seemed to know everything and I knew nothing. But then I realised it was all just books. You lived your whole life second-hand.
That is not fair. I had to make it seem like that, keep up appearances. You know why.
Oh, that's just an excuse. It didn't have to go on forever. You could have waited a few years and started to enjoy yourself. Do the clubs, have a bit of nightlife.
With you in prison, I'm not that callous.
I wouldn't have minded. The truth is, Will, you're incapable of enjoying yourself. That puritanical streak of yours says if it's fun, then it must be wrong.
That's why you and me got on so well. You could spend your time improving me, reading me great passages from the classics. And when I got bored and thumped you, you had the added pleasure of suffering for it. You're just a masochistic old queen, huh?
The other thing that irritates me about your spell inside is you've half digested enough Jung and Freud to fancy yourself as an amateur psychiatrist.
No! What irritates you is that I've started to answer back instead of just beating you up. You could still feel superior when I knocked a few teeth out, but when I put up a reasoned argument, that worries you. Well, if it's any consolation to you, I preferred it the old way as well. It was simpler then. If I wanted something, I took it. And if I didn't like someone, I bottled them. I used to sleep like a baby, Will. I never had any worries till you started filling my head with all that junk. Now I question everything I do.
Look, I was expecting something like this. It's a delayed reaction to being locked up so long. It's quite understandable. The truth is, you've got nothing to worry about. Your future is completely mapped out, totally secure. Everything's going to be just as we planned it.
Oh, don't you mean just as you planned it?
I did it for us. Don't tell me you've started to doubt that too.
No, I'm sure that's what you believed anyway.
It's the truth. We haven't grown that far apart, have we? I know it's been 20 years, but I've never stopped thinking about you.
Oh, the difference is you built your own prison. I never had that luxury.
Yes, I suppose I deserve that. But it wasn't easy for me either, you know. Especially at the start. Being able to visit. You did understand that, didn't you?
Oh, of course. It would have interfered with the master plan. People might have noticed. And naturally, you couldn't write either, because they would have read my letters.
I was worried you might think it was because I didn't care.
To be quite honest, Will, I had other things on my mind at the time. You know, like keeping on the right side of the screws, avoiding getting my head kicked in, slopping out, counting the bricks in my cell. I tell you, it's amazing how quickly 20 years flies by when you're having such a great time.
But it's over now. You got through it. We both did. But there's no point in letting it come between us. This is what we've been waiting for all these years.
Is it?
You'll see. You think I can't enjoy myself? Well, you've got a surprise coming. I intend to do nothing but have a good time for the rest of my life. I'm not such an old fuddy-duddy, really, you know.
I'll see your little moment of triumph through. I owe you that much, Will. But after that, I'm going.
You can't.
You just watch me.
Look, I wasn't going to tell you this. You know how I hate sympathy. But you won't have to stay very long.
Okay.
I've seen the doctor, and he's confirmed that I have terminal cancer. I have 6 months to live. Maybe more, maybe less. Either way, I think you could put up with me just that little bit longer.
I can't hold him down much longer.
It's all right, I've got the cuff.
This is stupid! We ought to be working together to get out of here.
Oh, do shut up, Derek.
You'll be finished if you handcuff me. I'm the only hope you've got of escaping.
Then I think we prefer to get shot. There, that's his hands. Now his feet. Okay, you can relax now.
All dressed up. Like a Christmas turkey.
How does it feel, Daddy?
What are you going to do to me?
I haven't really thought about it yet. How about you, Sophie?
The possibilities are endless.
Perhaps we should ask him. I'm sure he's had more experience of this sort of thing.
You've both gone mad! Whatever you do to me isn't going to save you.
What did you ever see in him?
I don't know. I often ask myself that question.
I suppose he still had his hair then.
Oh, if that was the attraction, it would have been cheaper to marry a wig.
There must have been something.
I had a very sheltered upbringing. Most of the men my mum had in mind were pretty awful. Derek seemed quite attractive in comparison.
Hard to believe, looking at him lying there. I've seen sexier things crawling out of cheese.
Oh, shut up.
Why don't you just divorce him?
We don't do that sort of thing in my family. We're supposed to live with our mistakes. So, I just had to sit back and watch him running to seed. Look at that guts.
It's disgusting, isn't it?
Would you mind if I gave him a kick? Not very constructive, I know, but I think it might make me feel better.
Feel free.
What? Thank you.
Oh, I say, that looks fun. Shall I have a go?
He's your husband.
I paid up for a course of therapy once, but this looks much more satisfying.
Oh, you rotten bitch!
Language, Derek, please. I must apologise for my husband, Sophie.
It's not your fault.
Oh, God.
He's irredeemably coarse, as you must have noticed. I used to think I could change him, smooth off some of the rough edges so he could be seen in polite company, but I had to give that up, too. We just don't go out anymore.
Ow!
You shouldn't give up so easily. I'm sure we could make a few improvements.
He's not worth it.
But it might be fun, in the interest of science. You mentioned the coarseness of his voice. We could lighten it. Make it a soprano, even.
Hey. I see what you mean. I think it's a wonderful idea.
This has gone far enough. Now, set me free and we can start thinking about how to get out of here.
That's just what we are doing. I get the distinct impression that you're the prime target in all this, while Sandra and I are just unfortunate witnesses. But if we were somehow implicated in what happened to you, they could rest assured that we wouldn't go to the police, so there'd be no problem about letting us go.
That's brilliant, Sophie!
Thank you! In the meantime, we can practice our cosmetic surgery.
You can't be serious!
Well, if she isn't, I am. How do we do it? I'm afraid I don't have any medical knowledge apart from what I've learned watching Casualty.
Largely trial and error, I'm afraid, but I do have a pair of nail scissors and a file. We'll see how we get on with those. Could you pass me my handbag, please, Sandra?
Certainly, Sophie.
Thank you. Well, they're nice and sharp anyway.
You keep away from me.
I suppose I ought to ask. You're not squeamish about the sight of blood, are you, Sandra?
Depends whose it is. In his case, definitely not. Mind you, Derek is. He's bound to faint before we finish the job.
Save using an anaesthetic. Not that I was intending to, anyway. Well, I think it's time we got on with it. Do you want the first cut, or shall I?
Don't you touch me!
Don't you mind if I did it? Derek never lets me carve the joint at home. He says it's a man's job. I'd like to prove him wrong.
What's going on?
Like you said, it's all about power, really.
We decided if Derek has to die, we've got no wish to go with him.
And if we helped him on his way, you'd know we wouldn't tell the police, so you could just let us go.
What do you think?
Well, sounds like the best offer I've had all day. It's not up to me, of course.
Oh, I'm sorry, I should have introduced you.
Sophie, this is Will Lavender.
Well,
I believe you two already know each other, Derek.
Pleased to meet you.
It took me ages to find him. He'd covered his tracks quite well, but I don't give up on these things.
Well, for pity's sake, get these cuffs off me. These women are mad.
What do you think?
Well, it's no point asking me. I haven't got the key anymore. I think I left it with Sophie.
I seem to have mislaid it.
Shame.
Well,
I see you've been the perfect host. Mind if I join you in one?
Well, feel free. It's your booze. Anybody else want a drink?
I wouldn't say no.
I think I might join you myself this time.
Oh, jolly good. Well, nice to see you relaxing a bit. I imagine you won't have one, Derek. You don't seem to have a hand for it at the moment. Here you are, Will.
Thank you. Oh. Very nice. You chose this one, didn't you?
Nash.
And to think, when I first met him, he only drank export lager straight out of a can.
So? What shall we drink to?
The future?
For those of us that have a future, that is.
That's still to be decided, of course. But we can all live in hope. The future.
The future?
The future.
Please, Will. I know I've never been much of a brother to you. You can't just stand by and let this happen.
He's right, of course.
What?
Us not letting you have a drink. Well, it's the height of bad manners. I'm surprised you didn't mention it yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry about that, Will. Will you be sticking with the white wine, Derek, or would you prefer something stronger?
I don't want a drink.
But we insist. Would you mind doing the honours, Sandra?
Certainly. Oh, I seem to have spilled my
supposed to be down his shirt, and it's his favourite, too.
Accidents will happen.
What do you want from me?
Who said I wanted anything?
Well, there has to be some point in this circus. Or maybe it's just revenge you're after.
Would you blame
me? You've always hated me, haven't you? Right from when we were kids.
Is that what you think?
It was just jealousy. And getting back at me won't change you. You were born a boring little squirt, and that's how you'll die.
Thank you.
You hated me because I was everything you couldn't be. The girls flocked after me, and you couldn't even get them to look at you. Except Cecily, of course, and she was as desperate as you were.
So why did you bother to seduce her?
Don't kid yourself, Will. She came after me. The only surprise is it took you 20 years to get angry about it. Still, it's probably par for the course. You were never one to be rushed into hasty decisions, were you? And you'd never be man enough to come after me yourself. So I expect you worked away 9 to 5 with the odd bit of overtime, of course. And you put aside a few bob here and a few bob there till you could afford to hire this gorilla to do your dirty work for you.
How much you paying him, Will?
Huh? Well, who cares? I have already offered him 20 grand to let me go. If I'd known you were behind it, I wouldn't have bothered. Because I know, when it comes to the crunch, you haven't got the guts to give the word.
Are you sure about that?
You couldn't live with yourself after. Could you, Will? Not with your own brother's blood on your hands. Tell you what I'll do. I'll pay him off and I'll give you 5 grand as a little present for old time's sake.
I don't want your money.
Oh, come on, Will. This has gone on long enough. I want to get home. I've got a business to run. Will, take these cuffs off me when I tell you.
You can't order me around any more, Derek. And I'm afraid there were a few serious errors in your summing up of the situation.
And I wasn't too keen on the gorilla reference myself.
Yes. You shouldn't let appearances deceive you, Derek. He can be quite sensitive sometimes. Especially since he's not the hired gun you seem to think. He was involved in all this long before you and Cecily eloped so romantically to Southend. Oh, I wasn't remotely angry about that, by the way. In fact, I should have thanked you for it long ago. Would have made things so much easier for us. If he hadn't got himself arrested, that is.
You mean you...
He picked me up in a toilet in Piccadilly. Not very romantic, I know. I turned him over, nicked his wallet. And when he came after me, I thought he was going to bring the police. But he only wanted to save my soul.
Well, my motives weren't entirely philanthropic.
Are you telling me you're a Nancy boy? A faggot, a queer, a 9 bob note.
All of those.
Ugh, that's disgusting. My own brother.
It's hardly worse than being an adulterer and a cheat, surely.
It is in my book. Can you imagine the stick I'll get from the lads down the pub if they ever found out?
Vividly. Now, can I tell you about my scheme?
Who cares about your scheme, you little pervert?
Do you remember the bullion robbery of 73?
What?
4 million. Give or take a few gold bars.
I believe it was a record at the time. It has been beaten since, but that lot was recovered. Ours never was.
Do you mean you had a share in it?
I planned it. Every detail. And there were only 2 major shareholders.
And you're looking at them. Of course, we had to hire a few gorillas.
It seemed to me that the problem with this sort of enterprise in the past, apart from a lack of imagination, was that they got too big. Too many people involved, and each one a potential weak link in the information chain. I decided to hire only through third parties and pay big money up front.
Yeah, it all worked out. Proper little criminal mastermind. Of course, I didn't do much thinking in those days, but I tried to make myself useful with the manual labour. I pulled 6 jobs in a year before the big one.
To finance recruiting.
It was all quite a revelation to me. He really opened new horizons. Changed armed robbery from a workaday chore into an art form. I just mugged people and nicked their wallets before that. Now, all of a sudden, I was climbing 5-story buildings and learning hang gliding. I still get the odd twinge from the broken ankle. And I don't think my collarbone will ever be right again, but... Well, you know what they say. No pain, no gain.
And you planned it all, Will. I never realised you had it in you.
You weren't meant to. We paid the gorillas straight cash. I think it was a fair deal for them. After all, they didn't have the risk of having to dispose of the stuff... Because that's the second problem with bullion. It's hard to shift.
Yeah, too right. I slipped a disc, remember?
I wasn't referring to the physical side. I meant to convert into cash.
Oh, sorry, Bill.
That's all right. It's also liable to attract attention. People get impatient to see a return on their investment, and then they get caught. I didn't touch the gold for 5 years, and then only a little at a time. I went to work every day. I had my 3 weeks holiday in Cornwall. I never deviated from the plan by one iota.
I'm sorry to ask, but if it was that clever, how come he ended up with 20 years inside?
Oh, well, unfortunately, the gorillas got greedy. But Will had always allowed for that. I made sure they could only point the finger at me.
Well, it was important, you see, that one of us was still on the outside to manage the gold, and since I was the one with the brains.
And we rehearsed what I should say at a trial.
The idea was that he should appear a small cog in a much larger machine. A simple thug who didn't really have any worthwhile information. He did it very well.
Thanks, Will. Mind you, 20 years was a bit stiffer than I was expecting, and that was after good behaviour. I suppose they were just sore about not getting their gold bar
back. But even if you spread the income over 20 years, it's still a fair return for the job.
Oh, yeah, I was laughing, really.
Why are you telling us all this?
Because we will be leaving the country shortly. We have more than enough money to cover any eventuality several times over. But there's still a large amount of gold to be disposed of.
How much are we talking?
Oh, at least £1 million worth. Well, we can hardly take it with us. It'd tip the excess baggage somewhat. We could leave it where it is, I suppose, till someone had the good fortune to find it, but that seemed a little untidy to me, and you know I like everything to be neat. So I decided to give it away.
£1 million?
Rather more than you ever managed to amass with all your devious charm, eh, Derek? I'm sorry? Did you say something?
I
thought perhaps you were apologizing for the way you misjudged and mistreated me all those years.
Sorry.
Louder.
I am sorry for the way I misjudged and mistreated you, Will.
How spontaneous. And convenient. You were always my first thought as beneficiary. Or perhaps someone would like to unlock his handcuffs.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, just a minute, though. I hate to offend his moral code. He might feel that the ill-gotten gains of a faggot, a queer, a nine-bob note were too tainted.
I never meant all that. Not really. I was upset. Misunderstandable in the circumstances, isn't
but
it?
But what about the lads down the pub? We don't want to upset them.
No one really cares about that sort of thing anymore. I mean, look at pop stars. They're all gay, aren't they? And their money's as good as anyone else's. That's what we always say. Isn't it, Sandra?
Homosexuals have always made a great contribution to our culture, like Oscar Wilde and Boy George.
Well, it's comforting to hear you two agreeing at last, because that was my other problem. You haven't exactly seemed close. If I were to entrust you with a secret like this, there would be no way you could ever part. It'd be far too risky.
Well, look! We're just like any other married couple, see? We have our ups and downs, but we'll always be together, eh, Sandra?
As long as it's split down the middle.
What are you talking about? I'm his brother! You're not even a blood relative.
If you argue about it, I'll make it 60-40.
You're not seriously considering going back to this creep?
Oh, give me the key. Oh. I managed to survive him for years on a pittance. With half £1 million, I could at least be miserable in comfort.
Oh, what a charming moment. I think you two should seal it with a kiss.
Hey?
Hey?
In fact, I insist.
Excuse me while I vomit.
Puffy like Cupid.
Okay, you've had your fun. I hope it seems worth it. Because I still don't understand why you are being so generous.
That is because you are not very bright, Derek. Think about it. I imagine £1 million must represent just about everything you've ever dreamed of, but couldn't attain. And I've given it to you out of petty cash. But it gets better. You see, You can't take a gold bar to the supermarket or even a bank. You need brains to convert it into money, Derek. A little bit here and a little bit there, never too much or you might attract attention. You need to learn the lessons that were being drummed into me while you were being too busy being Jack the Lad. Patience, humility, hard work. And all the time you'll be looking over your shoulder wondering who's watching you. Are you sure you want to take it on?
Quite sure, thank you, Will.
Yes, you always did overestimate your own capabilities. Still, if you're both happy, we might as well go off and make the arrangements.
Wait a minute. What about her?
Sophie, that's hardly your concern.
Well, I think it is. Especially if you two are leaving the country.
Yeah, what's to stop her blackmailing us? Or going to the police? Getting done for receiving stolen goods could be quite heavy when you are talking £1 million.
Oh, I suppose she'll have to have some money. That'll keep her quiet.
Yeah, not out of my million, though.
Our million.
Excuse me, do I have any say in this?
Later. You can all rest assured that Sophie will be taken care of. There will be no loose ends. But we really do have to be going now.
Oh, you'll be needing the car keys, Will.
Oh, thanks. See you later, Sophie.
Nice to have met you, Soph. I'm sorry about... Well, you know, no odd feelings, eh?
It's been a touching reunion.
Yeah.
I just preferred it when I thought you were dead.
Derek, come on.
You're coming. Bye.
What a charming couple. I'm surprised they didn't ask you to shoot me, just to be on the safe side.
I might have had a problem there. You see, this isn't a real gun. It's a replica. Will can't tell the difference. He's all theory. He leaves the practice to me. But if it's any consolation to you, Derek might not be your father.
What?
Well, apparently, it's just a slight possibility it might be Will.
I'm not sure that's much better.
Well, I wasn't too pleased about it either. I mean, look at it from my point of view. All the time he was supposed to be having an affair with me, he was being unfaithful with his own wife. I broke every bone in my body for that man. I did 20 years in the nick for him, and believe me, I had plenty of opportunity to be unfaithful in there. But I do try to consider other people's feelings.
Maybe that's where we go wrong.
Yeah. Still, look on the bright side. At least it makes him feel he's got an obligation to you. And Will's always been one for doing the right thing.
I see. How much is he intending to settle on me?
Well, how much do you want?
Oh, it's a bit difficult for me to think in millions. I was cutting out soap coupons this morning.
Well, you don't have to take that much. I mean, just enough to get you away from your mother. I mean, you deserve that.
It's tempting, of course, but I'd only feel guilty. She couldn't manage without me.
I wouldn't be too sure of that. She could always get a home helping. I don't know why she didn't do it years ago. She can afford it.
What?
Well, she had her bequest back in the 80s.
Oh.
Will wanted to be sure she had enough to look after you. Well, of course, she didn't realise it came from him. A distant relative.
Mm.
Well, I don't suppose she bothered to inquire too diligently.
She also forgot to mention it to me, the rotten cow.
Well, of course. Otherwise, she'd have lost her hold on you. But you see, there really isn't anything to tie you to her. So why don't you take the odd 100,000?
It still doesn't seem quite right. Or maybe I'm just frightened of going out into the big wide world by myself.
Well, you all feel like that. I couldn't wait to leave home, but it's still a bit daunting when you realise you've got to start fending for yourself.
I can't imagine you being frightened of anything.
Well, I was only 9 at the time. But of course I hadn't thought things through properly. It was just an instinctive reaction to having horrible parents. But looking back, I realised I'd unwittingly stumbled onto the most sensible path.
Perhaps 9 is a bit early.
Well, I'm not so sure. I believe everyone has an obligation to fly the nest at the earliest possible opportunity before they can get brainwashed. I mean, after all, the sole purpose of a conventional child is to prepare you for the injustices of life.
I've never really thought of it like that.
That just shows how effective it's been in your case. Mm. Parenthood is the most complete form of dictatorship known to man. They have absolute power over their subjects. They control their lives, their bed and their board, their income.
And if they're sentimental enough to give them pocket money.
And their word is law. There's no court of appeal. Now, why do the average citizen have put up with anything? They've been in practice since they were born. And if the parents aren't tough enough, there's always the school. The whole class will be kept in until someone owns up. Go off, you wear that one. What's to stop a circuit judge jailing the entire population of Brixton until someone confesses to a mugging?
Mm.
No, you've got to break free, Sophie. You owe it to yourself and to the world.
Well, you're right. I'll do it. I don't owe her anything, or him, whichever one of them it is. After all, I didn't ask to be born. No one consulted me.
Oh, they never do, do they? There's millions of us out there. Your conception may be shrouded in the haze of a Saturday night binge, but parents, well, they think it still gives them right to be looked after in their old age. We've got to stamp that out. We've got to stamp out that sort of nonsense.
But what am I going to do with my life?
I don't know. But we could have a lot of fun finding out.
What are we stopping here for?
This is where you two get out.
It's a trick. He's going to kill us.
You'll find a tent in the boot.
Well, what would we want a tent for? Well,
it looks like rain. Weather can get awfully bleak out here. I'd hate to think of you catching pneumonia.
Ah! Is the gold buried on this moor?
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Derek. Do you think I'd risk coming out here and digging it up every time I wanted a couple of bars? Not to mention the chance of some boy scout on a field trip stumbling over it. No, no, the gold is safe in the cellar of number 17 Rosborough Avenue, South End. Here are the keys.
Oh, thanks. So why did you bring us out here?
Well, as you must have noticed, it's very remote. There's virtually no chance of any passing traffic for you to thumb a lift, and it's an extremely long walk in either direction. We'll be well clear of the country before you rejoin civilization.
You don't trust anyone, do you?
That's the secret of my success. Personally, I'd suggest that you pitch the tent and wait until morning. Some of the terrain round here could be pretty hazardous on foot in the dark, and if you broke any bones, you probably wouldn't manage to reach a hospital before gangrene set in. Oh, dear, there's the rain. Better hurry up with that tent. I'd help, but I've got to be going now. Don't want to miss our flight. Hope you enjoy my ill-gotten gains.
Yeah. Thanks, Will.
Bye.
Derek. Put that tent up.
You put it up.
I'll do no such thing. It's a man's job.
I'm no bloody boy scout. I don't know what tents are about.
You don't know anything about anything.
Nor do you.
Oh, Derek, shut up.
What about clothes?
Eh?
Well, you've only got what you stand up in here. And I doubt you want me to go back to your mother's to fetch anything. Mm. Oh, well, if you like. Look, I'm not above the odd bit of breaking an engine. Though I'm a bit out of practice.
It's okay. I'd much rather go on a spending spree when we get there. I'm looking forward to that. My mother's always chosen my clothes out of catalogues. It's one of my earliest memories. In fact, till I learned to read, I thought that was the only purpose for literature. You know how when you're little, you make up stories to fit the pictures in the books? Well, all mine had to be about people in thermal underwear. So just to run free in a store, no shopping list from the old bag, no budget to stick to, no inquest afterwards. It'll be like all my birthdays and Christmases rolled into one.
Well, that's settled then. How about for the journey?
Quick zip round duty free?
Oh, why not? I mean, you look lovely in a cut price bottle of brandy and some travel sickness pills.
Are we really going to do it?
Are you getting cold feet?
No. I thought you might be. Or I might suddenly wake up to the old bag screaming for our Horlicks and realise it was all a dream.
Will, glad to see you back.
How were they?
Still squabbling in the rain when I left. I doubt they'll manage to get the tent up. Derek was never a competent Boy Scout. Still, at least they think they've got the prospect of £1 million to get them through the night.
Think they have.
I told you, he won't have the brains to turn it into cash.
And even if he does, Will can still have the last laugh.
What do you mean?
The hideout was always rented in Derek's name, and I left plenty of clues along the way. I can pull the plug on him any time I choose.
You think of everything.
That's what planning is all about.
Well, I'm afraid there's been a slight change of plan, Will. Sophie and I have decided we're going to South America together.
What?
I fixed all the travel arrangements while you were gone.
Then you'd better unfix them. I won't allow it.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, Will. You don't make the rules anymore.
You wouldn't last 2 minutes without me. Oh, you can kid yourself that you've become a sophisticated, well-read man of the world, but you're just like all that ghastly modern furniture. Looks all right at first sight, and you realise that there's only a thin veneer hiding the rubbish underneath.
Thanks a lot.
When you frittered away the money that I so carefully saved for you, as you undoubtedly will without my guidance, you will revert to type. Except you're a bit too old to be a juvenile delinquent now, and if you will pardon me mentioning it, no longer attractive enough to ensnare another benefactor, man, woman, or dog.
Well, that's given it to me straight.
So you'll probably end your days in some South American prison, where I am reliably informed the sanitation is even more primitive than at Her Majesty's establishments. And since the library, if they have one, will be in Spanish, you won't even be able to keep up the pretense of improving yourself.
And what about me? Will I end up in prison too?
Perhaps, though I suspect a Venezuelan brothel would be more suitable, if you can get one to take you.
Well, whereas you, the great Will Lavender, will come out of the whole experience unscathed.
I didn't say that.
Oh, don't be so modest, Will. You're a winner. Besides, it's so much easier for you. All you've got to do is to find yourself a psychopathic Mexican with a Viva Zapata moustache, and you can while away your last hours teaching him about the meaning of life while he practices the flamenco on your face in his Cuban heels.
Sadly, I won't have much time for such dalliances. I'd always planned to spend my last few months with you. That's what really hurts about all this. After all we've meant to each other, all we've been through, you couldn't even wait for me to die before you started dancing on my grave.
What's he talking about?
I'm dying of cancer.
You never told me that.
I'd left my violin behind.
Whatever happened to all that compassion you were supposed to have acquired in prison?
I'm saving it for those who really need it. You're not dying, Will.
I've told you. I've seen the doctor.
Yeah, and I even believed you for a while. But then I started to think it through, just like you taught me. You knew we were drifting apart, but you wouldn't give up, Will. You never give up. You knew deep down I still cared, so if you had my sympathy, if I thought you were dying, you'd be back in the driving seat. I haven't worked out yet what you planned to do when you were still in Rude Elf this time next year, but I expect you could have fitted in a quick weekend to Lourdes to explain the miracle.
I hadn't thought it through that far myself. I was just playing it by ear.
So you finally lost?
Not quite. I'm afraid you leave me no alternative. I'm retaining your half of the money.
You can't do that. He served 20 years for it.
It's for his own good. I'll let him have it as soon as he comes to his senses.
I'm sorry, Will, but that won't work.
You're not going to tell me that money doesn't buy happiness, are you? That you'll be fine without it?
Well, I wouldn't dream of it. But we'll be quite well off without you.
Oh, you're going back to your old ways, are you? I don't think that'll be much help. You could hardly make a living as a mugger when I first met you.
When I was in prison, the police kept coming round, but they soon realised I was never going to crack. Well, if you're doing 20 years, there's not much they can threaten you with. So we started to reach a bit of an understanding. I did a deal. I get my freedom and enough money to see me all right, and they get the rest of the gold. It means I have to blow the whistle on Derek a bit sooner than you planned. But I don't think any of us have shed any tears over that.
You really don't need me anymore, do you? You're much cleverer than I ever gave you credit for.
You taught me everything I know, Will.
Oh, you can have the money, of course. You've earned it. And then there'll be nothing else for me to do but to wish you both luck.
Oh, there's no need to take it like that, Will. We don't need you. But that doesn't mean we don't want you.
We thought we could all go together.
What? Think about the potential. All that pained jealousy. I could make you suffer as much as you've ever wanted, without risking putting you into hospital. And in between times, we could have fun, if you could only remember how.
That is quite the most disgusting suggestion I have ever heard.
Thanks. I knew you'd like it.
Like it? It's quite unthinkable.
You know your problem? You can't imagine having a relationship with anybody without controlling them. You have to be in charge. You have to pull the little string.
It's insecurity, you know. You can't believe anyone could like you for yourself, so you have to have power over them instead.
Perhaps you're right, but I'm too old to change now.
No, it's never too late, Will. Come on, we got some champagne put by, remember, for our celebration?
I don't feel much like celebrating anymore.
Oh, don't be such a killjoy. Would you mind getting the glasses, Sophie?
Pleasure.
I hate this wire stuff. That's it. Here we go. One for you.
Thank you.
Well, you, sorry about that. Well, here's to the three of us.
The three of us.
Will.
I haven't said I'm coming yet.
Oh, come on, Will. We've got more money than we could ever get through. There's no need to spend the rest of your life scheming and plotting and manipulating people.
But it's what I do.
Oh, well, now I knew you're bound to come up with something.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was reading this article about a diamond collection. They think the place is impregnable, but I don't think they've considered an aerial approach. Of course, we need a good diversion, and you'd need a bit of practice on the helicopters, but I think
Will,
we could... Yes?
Shut up and drink your champagne.
The part of the hitman was played by Leslie Grantham, Will Lavender, Keith Drinkle, Derek, Steve Hodson, Sandra, Frances Jeter, and Sophie, Sarah Jane Holm. Will and Testament by Bill Lyons was directed by Jane Morgan in the Christchurch Studios, Bristol. And now fit-ups, portables and basket cases. The actor Charles Simon was the last radio Dr. Dale. Here he is with his unrivaled memories of how theatre used to be before we, the radio, came along.
15 minutes, please.
To any young actor subject to stage fright, I would heartily recommend an engagement in one of the small companies called a fit-up. The name was apt, for they carried with them cunningly constructed equipment which enabled them to set up a stage and scenery in a parish hall, an inn yard, and often just in a field. Although it was pretty rough going, I've never regretted the experience, for believe me, after having worked in a fit-up, you will never again be scared of an audience, a director, or anything in this world. I had obtained a job with the late Seymour Hicks, one of the great actor managers of his day, to play Fred Wayland in his music hall version of Dickens' A Christmas Carol. We were to open at the Coliseum and were rehearsing in a room very near the famous dome. One didn't get paid for rehearsals in those days. In fact, the entire London contract was decidedly dicey. It was called No Play, No Pay, and meant just exactly what it said. It was possible to rehearse for 3 weeks without pay, for your first night to be a flop, and for you to receive, say, a couple of nights' pay for your 4 weeks' work. We rehearsed for 3 weeks before the great man appeared on the Monday morning of the fourth week, while I was rehearsing my first scene, what I thought being rather good. As we finished, and I turned, expecting to be introduced, he turned to his stage manager, as directors were called then, pointed a finger at me, and in a tone of great distaste, said, "And where did you find that? Come here, young man. I suppose you hope to be an actor one day, eh? Take it from me. You'll never make an actor if you live to be a million. Go and see my manager and get damages." Having written to my parents and all my friends to say that my name was going up in lights in the West End, I left the room with my heart coming through my lace holes, trudged up the Charing Cross Road to the office, where I was given £3 damages, and turfed out onto the street. At the first newsagent's, I bought a copy of the stage newspaper, and in a lion's tea shop, read the ads. Amongst the demands for lion tamers, jugglers, and trick cyclists, there was one which read, "Wanted, good juvenile man, dress well, on and off, £2.5 weekly, fares refunded, wire Grafton, Town Hall, Cavan, Irish Free State." Here was my salvation, to take my shame with me and disappear into the wilds. I'd never been to Ireland and knew nothing of fit-up companies. I arrived in Cavan, having sold my wristwatch and a suitcase, a present from my mother, to pay the fare. After 3 train journeys and a very rough crossing, not having had a wink of sleep, I was met at the station by a weasel-like fellow who thrust a heap of scripts into my arms, saying, "There's your place for this week. It's the only town we shall play in, so we're doing 8 nights here. Open tonight with Napoleon and Josephine. You're playing the juvenile. Tomorrow night, the Silver King." "What?" I gasped. "A different play every night?" "What do you expect?" said he. "Drury Lane? Learn it for tonight. What you don't know, gag it." Which meant, of course, make it up as you go along. When I got on stage that night in my ill-fitting costume, I was stupefied. I knew nothing about the play, except that the big scene was where Josephine refused to sign the divorce document presented by Napoleon and left the stage after a great piled-up speech calculated to get an enormous round of applause. It was only in the middle of this speech that I realized the stage floor was shifting beneath me, and too late found that I was standing on the lady's train. She was frantically pulling at the thing to no avail, and as she reached the exit line, the weight of the train pulled down her skirt, and the poor dear left the stage in her drawers and tears, to delighted whoops from the boys at the back. I survived the incident only because it was impossible to get another actor over from England in time, and they knew that so long as they didn't refund my fare, they had a captive juvenile man. Anyway, survive I did, to spend a year travelling from village to village, often on top of the scenery on a horse-drawn wagon, under which in the summer we often slept. And summer was the time in that glorious countryside. On arrival at the new venue, we would seek the parish priest's approval of the play to be performed, without which no one would have dared to attend, set up our fit-up, and wait for the audience. We were always advertised to start at 7:30, but often at harvest time, the curtain would rise at nearly midnight. We would sit in the field waiting for the dusk and watching the lanterns coming down the hillsides, knowing that here was our audience. When the house was full, someone would call, "All right, you can start now." And up would go the curtain. The show consisted of, first, variety, every actor being expected to do a bit of juggling or a song or something. Then the main drama, followed by a farce, the kind of thing which was performed after the plays at the theatres Royal Drury Lane in Covent Garden many years before. The audience was always reluctant to leave, and would often tell us how much better last year's company had performed the play. They knew most of the dramas by heart, and could be heard saying the big speeches with the actors. For there had always been a great tradition of travelling players in Ireland, many of them led by actors who were to become famous, and who even then had preferred to tour the villages with their own companies. The plays consisted of mainly Dion Boucicault dramas, Aaron O'Pogue and The Shogron, a marvellous revival of which was presented at the Royal National Theatre. Standard melodramas such as The Silver King and Under Two Flags. After the performance, we were often carted off to the nearest bar, where we were taught how to drink Guinness, and were inevitably joined by the priest and a small detachment of the civic guards. At the end of the year, the manager coughed up my fare, and thinking that by now my disgrace would have blown over, I returned to London and made for the Hippodrome Corner, where, for some reason never explained, most out-of-work actors gathered. Having been unable to save anything from my erratically paid £2.05 a week, I was dead broke and pretty miserable. standing there on the hippodrome corner in the rain, amusing myself by squelching the water in and out of the hole in the sole of my shoe. When suddenly I was slapped on the back, and a voice said, "Hello, Charles, I've got a job for you." And there was Seymour Hicks's manager, who had witnessed my disgrace the year before. "Well, what is it?" I inquired. "Same as last year, you know, Scrooge." I was horrified. "You must be out of your mind. He sacked me before I opened." "Oh, don't worry about that. He won't remember you." Well, I thought £3 is better than nothing, and I accepted. And history repeated itself, except in one important detail. We had reached the Monday morning of the fourth week of rehearsal, and Hicks had arrived, and once again I was rehearsing my scene. We stopped, and I thought to myself, "Here we go, £3 and out on me here." But Hicks sat back in his chair, said, very nice, my boy," and started rehearsing himself. Most of the principal companies were controlled by actor-managers. There was much to be said for the system, which ensured continuity of policy and a company of actors accustomed to working together. Of course, in some cases, an actor became a manager to enable him to play the leading roles which no one else would cast him for. But when I began touring my own company, I soon became aware of the disadvantages. The proprietors of the theatres I would visit had obligations to their shareholders and cast a jaundiced eye upon any proposed production which was not an established popular success. And then, of course, there was still the Lord Chamberlain's license, which had to be obtained before any new play could be performed. The license always carried an appendix, which stated which words or phrases could not be used before the public. The Chamberlain's department was always courteous, but always adamant when it came to their conception of what might corrupt. I recall how horrified they were when I applied for a license for a version of Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray. I have the license to this day, and am still mystified as to why the phrase "unnatural interest" had to be replaced by "so much interest." It was a great relief when the system was abolished. Its only advantage had been the protection it gave against the interference of local watch committees. Now, these were bodies of town councillors whose functions included the licensing of theatre buildings, but which they often tried to expand to a censorship of the material to be performed. Unaware that the Lord Chamberlain's license permitted the play, as passed, to be performed in any licensed theatre in England and Wales. I'm afraid I found these interfering busybodies with their inflated ideas of their importance a great irritation, and delighted in waving the play license under their noses. I could only wait until public pressure brought about its abolition. We invariably included 4 or 5 Shaw plays in each year. I had acquired a love of Shaw's work from a very early age. In fact, I'd first met Mr. Shaw without knowing it, as a small child. My mother was a great believer in throwing young people into the deep end of the arts world as soon as they could speak, and always took us to the Three Choirs Festival in Gloucester Cathedral. Of course, it was far above my head, and on my first visit I sat bored out of my mind, and would certainly have been kicking the chairs, had it not been for an elderly gentleman sitting next to me, who surreptitiously handed me humbugs. My mother was greatly shocked that I should be eating sweets in the house of God, but happily the gentleman persisted. It was not until many years later that I was told that the confectioner was the great George Bernard Shaw. He was greatly amused when I told him the story after I got to know him through my work on his plays. He was a man with the most delightful manners, tolerant of enthusiastic young men like me and always ready with suggestions and constructive criticism. He turned up at two of my productions of his work, and I'm happy to say we were on form on those occasions and he went away pleased. So you see, even in the acting profession, in spite of the constant slog, disappointments and crises, there can be moments when you feel it is all worthwhile. When new life is breathed into you, and you plough on towards the next good moment, when you can say to yourself, "Tonight, for once, I got it right."
Beginners, please.
Fit-ups, portables and basket cases was written and presented by Charles Simon. The producer was Matt Thompson. Next week at the same time, Charles falls into the hands of the Blackpool entrepreneurs and becomes part of the cheekiest and most daring experiments in seaside entertainment. This is Radio 4.